Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue and Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. They always deliver, Chad.
Holy cow, this is some good food at Poncho and Lefty's. We've got a listener here with us right now. We urge more of you to come have lunch with us. I got the pork belly quesadilla, and that was a sound decision by me. Very sound.
And it's gone.
It's gone. We have learned in this business how to eat quickly during a commercial break.
It's not
there is
good.
No time
it's
wasted.
Not good for the digestion. I got half of the burrito bowl in. It's outstanding. But the thing I do is the habit we've formed here for eating in a sprint is how I eat all my meals. Now,
you're like
a shovel.
My dad was like that for a while. He said when he got out of the military, we have so much time to eat. So every time he ate a meal, it was always no talking, just eat as fast as possible.
John Feinstein joins us, award-winning columnist, best-selling author. He joins us each Monday as we hit the national headlines. John, hope you're doing well today.
Well, I'm starving.
You're welcome.
Crying out loud. And, you know, Chad, it's funny because my dad was in the Army in World War II. And he used to, most nights, he would finish eating before my mom sat down.
It's amazing to watch. And my dad still has a little bit of that as well. And by the way, thanks to your father for being a part of the greatest generation. Hearing that, I did not know that, John. What I do know, though, is that the Atlanta Braves seem to find a way, even when they're having a great postseason, to have a very Atlanta Braves postseason moment. Just so happened last night, it was a huge base-running blunder by two different players that led to a double play when the Braves had a chance to really make something happen and extend the lead against the Dodgers, and they came up empty because of that.
Yeah, they really did. That was obviously the critical moment in the game, because if you extend the lead, if you make it a three-run lead, four-run lead, who knows what would have happened in the inning if not for the double blunder on that one play. They might probably even would have won the game. You don't know for sure. You don't know how many runs they might or might not have scored in that inning, but they took away the opportunity, put it that way, by running the bases so poorly. And it really is sad because the Braves had an amazing season. To lose Mike Soroka, their best pitcher, to have the injuries they had, to then go on and win the East and pitch as well as they did in both the wild card round and the division series, and then build a 3-1 lead against the Dodgers, who were the best team in baseball in the regular season. So close to going back to the World Series, which they haven't been in since, 1999, I think. It really is a shame. And I say that as someone who had no skin in the game between the Dodgers and the Braves. I respect both organizations. I know Stan Kasten well, not only from his days with the Braves, but here in Washington with the Nationals. So, but you hate to see a good team have its season end on such a down note.
So you got the Yankees with the highest payroll in baseball, the Dodgers second, Red Sox third, you've got the Braves 14th, and then you have the Tampa Bay Rays with the 24th biggest payroll in the league. This is where baseball has become a little bit more fun, John, is that you've got these stories every year of a team that just drafts well, that has a system, they don't have a ton of stars, and yet here they are, the Tampa Bay Rays in the World Series as American League champions.
Yeah, and you've got to give the entire organization credit for the moves they're able to make with that limited payroll. And they took a gamble signing a 36-year-old pitcher, Charlie Morton, to, for them, a very big contract, $15 million this offseason, and clearly it paid off, especially in Game 7 against Morton's former team, the Astros. And I'll say this. When they hired Kevin Cash as their manager, I was very skeptical. And what had Kevin Cash done to become a major league manager as opposed to some other guys? I'm a big Charlie Montoyo guy. He had been the bench coach in Tampa Bay. Why not give him the shot? And, of course, now he's doing very well in Toronto. But Kevin Cash has done an amazing job managing the talent that he has and I think it's going to be a great World Series. I think anybody who thinks the Dodgers are going to roll in four or five is mistaken, which means I probably just jinxed the poor Rays.
So, John, leave it to Nick Saban. Not only is he maybe already the greatest college football coach of all time, certainly headed in that direction, but the man cured COVID-19. Also, he has solved the problem of it in 3 days after testing positive for COVID-19. He clears all protocols. He's on the sideline.
Trump is going to hire him to replace Dr. Fauci. but you know what was interesting? I'm sure you guys saw that Zoom interview he did. I guess it was on Wednesday, right after he was was diagnosed with COVID, and I thought his attitude was great. His approach was the right one. I'm going to stay home until they tell me it's okay. And he said he was asymptomatic, and it looked like he was asymptomatic. And sure enough, 3 days later, he's on the sideline for one of the biggest games of the season. And Alabama, as it almost always does, not always, but almost always does in big games, comes through and beats Georgia. So, yes, all power to him. He's not only, as you said, he's won 6 national championships. He's got a statue in front of Bryant-Denny Stadium. They'll probably change the name to Bryant-Denny Saban Stadium at some point, and he's cured COVID-19. That's a pretty good resume.
When I saw the day's hockey news, I honestly thought that there could not be a worse development for the National Hockey League than the retirement of Mike Emmerich. This guy is the best play-by-play broadcaster in any sport, as far as I'm concerned. And the energy he brings to a game draws me into games that I'm not that interested in. And I think they lose me flipping by a game as a guy who might watch.
You know, I thought much the same thing when I saw the news this morning, Paul, and you just hit on it, though. If you listen to Mike Emmerich do a December game between two mid-level teams, you would think it was the 7th game in the Stanley Cup Finals. Not because he screams, not because he has some shtick, but because he brings absolute enthusiasm and great preparation to every game he's ever done. I've done some TV and radio, and one of the things I've learned from some of the better play-by-play guys I've worked with is you approach every game as if it's the biggest game you've ever done in your life, because for the teams involved, the players and coaches involved, it's a big game. Every game is a big game. And Mike Emmerich took that approach throughout his entire career. I remember him when he was doing the Devils games before he went national, and thought he was fantastic then. Wished the Islanders would have stolen him from the Devils. But it is a sad day for hockey to not have Mike Emmerich doing those games, because, you know, there are certain broadcasters, and it's a handful, that when you hear them doing a game, like you said, Paul, it's a game you want to watch, and you feel like it's a big game, whether it's a big game or not. And Mike Emmerich absolutely filled all of that.
John Feinstein, our guest here on the Midday 180.
John, last night on Football Night in America, Mike Tirico paid tribute to Sid Hartman, who passed away at 100 years old yesterday in Minneapolis. You know that you've had a big-time impact on your industry and a market when a national broadcast is saying something and paying tribute the way they did Sid Hartman, certainly a big-time figure in sports writing.
Oh, there's no question about it, Chad. And how many guys live to see a press box named after them? The press box in the Viking Stadium is the Sid Hartman press box, and has been since the building opened. And when I was out there a couple of years ago working on my quarterback book, there was Sid, having done his pregame show. He was a youth then. He was only like 96, sitting there holding court, as he always did. I went way back to my very early days in journalism, knowing Sid as an elder even then. And I've told the story before, but Sid played a role in my coming up with the title for A Season on the Brink, because he was very good friends with Bob Knight. He was one of those handful of reporters that Bob liked and respected. And when Indiana played at Minnesota, the season I was doing the book, they arrived in town late Thursday night having lost at Iowa badly. And Sid walked into breakfast when the team was having breakfast, and Knight was in one of those moods where he wasn't talking to anybody. And he didn't even look up at Sid. And Sid understood. Sid had dealt with Knight before. And as we walked out of breakfast, Sid turned to me, figuring it was safe to talk to me, and said, "So what are you going to do all day in the snow here in Minneapolis?" And I said, "Well, I guess I'll just do what I do every day. I'll follow Knight around." I was putting myself down, saying I had no life. Well, Knight was walking about two steps ahead of us, and he turned around and started screaming at me in what proved to be a harbinger of the incident that ended his coaching career at Indiana. "Don't you call me Knight. You don't call me Knight. You can call me Coach. You can call me Bob, but you're 28 years old. You don't call me Knight." I wasn't calling him Knight. I was talking to someone else about him. And I knew enough to know you don't start an argument with Bob in front of his coaches, because he had to win the argument. So I just said, "I'll see you at practice." Walked out the door, started walking around in the snow, and I was pissed, to be honest. And I said, you know, to myself, every day we're on the brink of another disaster. Doesn't matter, win, lose, always on the brink of something. And then I thought, wow, that might be a pretty good title. So Sid Hartman played a major role in my life in that sense, and also because he was always so nice to me. And I'm sure you guys also know that his son, Chad, is a talk show host in Minneapolis, and as good as it gets, and a class act too.
I knew you'd have a great story, John, when I asked about that. you certainly
did. That was great.
You also have something that's new for you, an audio-only book that's out today. What can you tell
Came
us about
out today, it? Chad. Thanks for bringing it up. It's something I've never done before. It's unique in that sense. It's five interviews with people I've known for a long time and been close to. Steve Kerr, Mary Carrillo, David Faraday, Mike Krzyzewski, Tom Izzo. Five, I think, pretty significant figures in sports for different reasons, but five people I've known well. And so the audio book is called The Friends I've Made. And it's about 5 hours long, about an hour for each person, 30 to 40 minute interview with each of the five, preceded by me talking about them, how I got to know them, how our relationships developed, and then kind of an epilogue after each interview with me talking about what we discussed during the course of the interview. And it was great fun to do, because during the pandemic, it gave me a chance to spend some time with and reconnect with people I have been close to through the years. And I got to say, all five of them were great. They're very intimate conversations, because they're with people, as I said, that I've known for a long time and liked. And as a reporter, if you don't admit to the fact that you like certain people more than others, you're being dishonest with yourself. There's no such thing as objective reporting. We all have biases. You just have to understand that you have biases and be fair no matter what. And these are five people I'm very much biased towards, and who have all obviously been very good at what they do. So it was a great project. Like I said, it's called The Friends I've Made, and you can get it on Amazon and other places as of today.
Outstanding. John Feinstein has been our guest. Yes, thank you, John, and we will catch up next week.
Look forward to it. I can't wait to see what the Titans come up with next week.
5-0 next Sunday. We'll see. Thank you.
5-0, 5-0, and boy, you know, win or lose, you guys are having a fascinating season, and Ryan Tannehill's an amazing story.
Now, the Tennessee Vols are another story, though. You know, that's
very much so.
Yes. Back and forth.
They'd won eight in a row, and now they've lost two in a row, and that loss to Kentucky on Saturday was embarrassing.
Chad, you said the 1800s was the last time that Kentucky won by that margin?
It was the worst. It was the biggest win, margin of victory, for Kentucky since 1893, which was the first game of the series between the two.
For the record, Chad and Jonathan, I was not around for that game.
You weren't around for the Grover-Cleveland administration, is what I'm hearing?
No, I miss Grover-Cleveland, and McKinley was my first president.
We look forward to that book, that audio book. John, thank you. Appreciate
you. Talk to you next week, guys. Thanks a lot.